outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, Kyle, I spent a lot of my morning, much more than I wanted to, trying to appease the government of California.
I'm surprised you were able to do that in just one morning.
Oh, I'm sure we're not done.
What's going on?
Our car insurance up for renewal, and they sent us. Okay. They sent us now. Not only you just write your check to renew your stuff, you got to send them a picture of your VIN number, a picture of your driver's license, a picture of the car from the right quarter, and from the left quarter, from the rear left. So you get both sides of the car, license plates. Oh, it's ridiculous. It takes so much time to get all these photos, and VIN numbers do not photograph well. Some are actually put there so you can't see them. And what's going on? Why is all this? And it's a new law in California, I guess, because of fraud. I don't know what the fraud is where they need all. The reason I thought, well, the insurance company wants all this information on hand, so if you get in an accident, they don't have to collect all that data.
Yeah.
No, it's a required by law. And it's because of fraud. The level, what, this is my rant for the day. What fraud costs us in America. And it's not, Sarah had a doctor's appointment today. She had a test she needed. She actually needs two tests from the same doctor. But you can't do two tests in one visit because doctors started multiplying tests and to make money off Medicare or whatever insurance company you got. And so she's got to go two different times, drive across town to the same doctor to have another test that she could have had in 5 minutes that she was there. Oh, I tell you what, fraud, we've been talking a lot about living in the truth and living in a lie. It is the people who live in lies and fraudulently do stuff that costs everybody else ridiculous amounts of time and energy and effort. I can't stand it. I can't. I've had my fill of it. How much time do I waste because there's dishonest people? Just like how much of the COVID money was fraudulently attained and fraudulently spent? And the government care, didn't prosecute, didn't go fine. Oh, you just cannot manage a society this big with liars who use whatever means they can to line their own pockets. And the honest person, which I know, it's about 78% of us are kind of doing the right thing, being honest. When I sign a form with my signature, I actually mean it. I mean, I had lawyers kind of advise me maybe it'd be better to affect the truth some. But, you know, when I'm signing a document, I take it seriously. I know New York, they don't. You can sign a document. It's no big deal. Whether your property's worth that much or not, it doesn't matter. Nobody gets hurt. You just sign whatever you want. I mean, I get back to a society where signing your name matters, where penalty of perjury matters, and attack this where the fraud is happening, not punish everybody else in society. This is why I think it's just crazy.
Yes, but if you live in a system, in a space that accountability for the most public of individuals is almost zero, then that's just inviting and increasing the probability of fraud, right? Because it's getting back to that scarcity or that separation mindset of, okay, or worldview of, okay, well, if I don't do X, Y, and Z, if I don't compromise my morals, if I don't, then I'm going to get behind. It's a limited amount of, there's a very limited amount of resources. The pie is very small. And so I'm going to be one of the haves, not the have-nots, no matter what it takes. And then we start celebrating them.
Oh, I hear that all the time. And that's, everybody else has to do it. So now you have to be fraudulent too to keep up. And dishonesty destroys everything. Yeah. Relationships, the ability to help have a society in which people are reasonable and rational and kind to each other. Nope, if you can lie. In fact, I read this, Sarah, and I read this in the book this week. Not the best thing I heard this week, but this would be up there somewhere. It said this, the lie-based, this was in Jamie Winship's book, Living Fearless, which we're still reading. This lie-based conversation is easy to believe because it never takes faith to believe what's false. Mm. Never. But it takes faith to believe what's true. That's why deception spreads so easily in the world. It takes no faith to believe a lie.
Yeah.
You just take the, it's a story you want. So I'll take the story I want. It takes faith to believe what's true about yourself, about the world you live in, about all that. And that's why I think what God desires more than anything is truth in the innermost heart and a love for the truth, that even if the truth hurts me, challenges me, makes my life more complicated, I'd rather embrace what's true than find comfort in a lie. But I'm a minority in this world, unfortunately. Well, maybe not if we're 78%. It's just the other 22%. They have a lot of power somehow.
They do have a lot of power. And I think that's the challenge is that often those people that aren't in that 78% are also not the people that are in the upper echelons of power and financial wealth either, because they're not willing to compromise their morals, their integrity, their character in order to obtain things that this world perceives or this world system perceives as successful.
Sadly. Yeah. Anyway, it's my rant for the day. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Maybe our last for a while. So those of you that are
maybe
enjoy this, Kyle's needing to take a little bit of a break.
Yep, I have some family stuff going on. And so we'll be out for probably at least 3 weeks. So we'll see how that goes.
But we will see how that goes. And I don't know if Sarah and I will fill in or if we won't. I'm busy doing a lot of writing these days. So if I give this a bit of a hiatus, people, there's so much back there. 900 and some odd of these things. I forget. So if you need a fix on a Friday, go pick one, anyone. Hopefully the more current ones. But yeah, we're going to let Kyle have some time off and I'm not going to try and press it. Sarah and I are also leaving. This will air right as we're getting ready to leave for our trip. So that'll make it more complicated as well. So yeah, we're probably going a bit of a hiatus.
Have you started to figure out your travel destination itinerary? Is that getting solidified or is it still in fluctuation?
It'll be in fluctuation all along, but right now we're going to Austin, Texas, see the eclipse there. And then we're heading east from there, probably south along the coast, the Gulf Coast, and then up into Mississippi and then across the Carolinas, probably get to Richmond and Baltimore for two things people want to host out there for us. And then from there to Lexington. And then from there, maybe straight back to Denver, depending on the time frame, or maybe take a swing further north. There's some folks in South Dakota that would like us to come. So we're kind of seeing if that can fit in, but we won't know till we get that far along. But we're getting excited. It's time to get everything ready to go, and went out and did something in the RV the other day and the battery's dead. So there you go.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So who knows if we'll ever get out of here, but now we got to get a new battery for that. Yeah. So, we're getting real excited. It's time to go. Yeah. So
are you doing any intentional retreats or is it more just spending time with people who've invited you to hang out with them? Or what does this kind of look like for you and Sarah as you're about to embark on another transnational road trip?
Transnational. Wow. there'll be some things where larger groups of people are getting together to do some chatting. I don't know if they'd call them retreats, but you know, getting together for a weekend or few days. And then there'll be a lot of smaller conversation kinds of things. But yeah, it looks like in certain places, there's just a lot of interest in a given area to say, man, there's a lot of people that kind of want to hang out for a couple of days and be part of the discussion conversation. So yeah. And hopefully I keep writing my book while I'm working on that. So since I do all the driving, I don't get to work on it while we're driving unless I dictate it. We're looking forward to it. It should be fun.
So what are some of the topics that you are getting invitations? Like what are you seeing on people's hearts right now? What are they wanting to explore or discuss with you more right now?
We haven't been out in a while, so I don't know. Okay. It's always different. And it's even different in certain stops. So some people want to talk about the whole, he loves me, living loved, and how do I get in that space? And other people want to talk about kind of community, how I find community, how I experience it. But I'm not going to a normal religious system to find that. Others want to talk about trauma now and what Sarah's gone through and what we've learned in our journey. The learning curve from 2 years ago, right now, this thing is coming up on me and I don't have a clue to what Sarah and I were talking about this yesterday, to what we have learned in the last 2 years is freakish. Yeah. It's huge. And so a lot of people want to talk that, a lot of couples who don't know how to connect with each other well in their traumas, whether they both have it or one has it, and how does the other love and walk alongside, and what does it take to be a companion to someone in trauma? So we get into that conversation a lot. And then I think some of the stuff with the vision and the letters to the bride and the day of the Lord and some of those kinds of issues are coming up in my personal conversations. So I suspect they'll come up on the road.
Interesting. It'll be exciting to hear kind of what conversation space that you get into and even some of the new content that you may be encountering as you are just enjoying conversation with people across the country.
Yeah, for sure. Because I learn more in conversations with people than when I'm home now. I don't do as much of that for long stretches because we're not out on the road. I have a lot of personal conversations, but I'm excited to see what's out there and what we've got to learn and what Sarah and I get to enjoy together. A lot of this time is just time away for us. And yeah. So that's all good, too. So we'll see.
Love that.
Yeah. And we'll keep your family in prayer. You got some situations going there. It's not like I had 2 years ago, just so y'all know. Kyle's not taking a hiatus for the same reason I did a couple of years ago, but there's just some medical issues and things that it's going to take a little more time than Kyle can fit the podcast in. So he's cutting back everything, right? Except just the teaching you have to do.
I am. Yep. I'm cutting back pretty much. I'm taking 2 weeks off from the coaching and then podcasting, and we'll start to kind of reintegrate stuff depending on how life is flowing. But my primary source of income is my contract at Sheridan College. And so I've got to make sure that I'm fulfilling that. I can't believe we have 6 weeks left. This academic year has felt like an absolute blur. It has been crazy, but I have loved every minute of it. It's been such a joy and an affirmation for me, and just the conversations that I get into with students every single day. It blows my mind.
You're enthused. We were talking about that where you were a year ago and the stresses of all you were dealing with and how much joy, even though there's a lot of stress going on, how much joy is in your life now for the things you're doing, which is beautiful. Anything, best thing you heard this week?
Oh man, I've got a few. I was going to use a different one, but I got into a conversation with some students just 2 hours ago in one of my classes, and we were talking about active listening and what is it like to be present with a person, or what is it like to be present with our partner as we're listening to them. And one of the students was like, man, if you're actually listening, it's exhausting. And we had this great laugh because it's like, yeah, if you're actually attuned and if you're actually being there and present with that person, it takes a lot of brain space to be able to be there and be not listening with a curt response already expected, or having I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so that I can say the next thing. No, you're actively a part of the conversation and the dialogue, and then you're having to thoughtfully meditate on what they're saying and respond in an insightful way. I mean, that takes a lot of work. And so I was dying laughing when the student was like, man, this is exhausting work. I just cracked up. This is my marriage and family class. I was like, yeah, it is.
Who knew listening would be so exhaustive? But
who knew? Yeah. Who knew that that little relational thing would be so exhausting?
Yeah, but so powerful. You can really stay present. And they say most of us, I don't know, 70% of us or something are not actually in the moment we're in. We're either worrying about something in our past or we're anxious about something in the future. And we're really not in the moment. And that's just with ourselves, much less if you're in a conversation and you start thinking of these other things going on and you realize you've tuned the other person out and you don't even know.
You're in a completely different memory. You're not even in the same room anymore. You're off somewhere, like mentally off somewhere else. And then to be able to circle back, and even how do you repair the conversation when they're like, are you still here? Like, did you go somewhere else? Like, what just happened
there? Or even worse, there's this long, giant pause, and you look up like, it's not going to work. You actually asked me something. Yes. Yeah. Oh, Sarah and I have had that moment.
Oh, man.
Babe, I kind of got distracted. Can you ask me that again?
Yes, absolutely.
And because she's a fawner, that's easy. She'll ask it again, and she won't take great offense to it. She knows her husband well. I had a good friend of mine say this week, he was talking to a friend about love, rest, and play and some of the stuff that we've been talking about. And this is a mid-60s-year-old man who's been through a lot of stuff, and he just looked at my friend, and he said, you know what I want to do? And my friend said, what? And he said, I want to learn to play again. Mm. What a great statement from that age. I want to learn to play again. And that's that's the childlikeness. That's where God does some amazing stuff. If we can find our way back into play.
It's interesting how challenging that is for people though, especially adults. When you start to talk about, and I get this all the time, even with my college students, but especially my non-trad college students that are in their 30s to even mid 40s or even mid 60s, where they're coming back for additional education in whatever field that they're going into, and to ask them about play and what does play look like in their life. And often these are, you know, they've got kids, they've got a job that they're working either part-time or full-time, and they're taking classes. And I sat down with my counseling class this 2 weeks ago, and we sat down and I brought out a couple of decks of Uno, and I said, okay, we're going to play Uno together as a class today. And one of my students almost lost it because they were like, I'm not paying for this. This is not, I don't have time for this. If we're not going to be doing something meaningful, then I'm going to leave because I've got other things I got to do. And I just paused and I said, that right there is exactly why we're doing this. Because the whole class was on being attuned to people and being present in the moment and being able to play. And this individual is older. They are a veteran, a former combat medic. Yeah. I mean, their life is very directive and very on purpose all the time. And yet, man, the essential necessity of play, of doing something for pleasure and no objective, no timeline, no prayer, just for the sheer sake of enjoyment. That's hard. I think harder and harder for especially adults to give themself permission to do.
Did he stay and play?
He did.
Oh,
he
good.
Stay and play. I was very proud of him.
I was with a young guy this week that's struggling with the same thing, just in his orientation to being fruitful for God. Mm. Every moment has to be fruitful or I can't live with myself because I feel like I'm shirking my responsibility. And it's just watching my younger self. I remember those days where you're too important and too busy and too whatever to the kingdom that to do something for the sheer enjoyment, even if you do it, you feel guilty about it because I could have done something, quote unquote, for God over here, which really at that point isn't about for God. It's about for our guilt. And so I'd rather do something, quote unquote, for God so I don't feel guilty than learn to play. Yeah. It's okay to learn to play. And some of us need to relearn it.
Which is crazy because when did something for the sheer sake of enjoyment fall under the category of wrong behavior? Right? Because guilt is I did something wrong. There was a behavior that I did that was wrong, that was destructive, that was painful, that was malicious. How did play ever fall into that category? What went awry that landed us in that space?
When obligation became more important than relationship. Hmm. Relationship takes play. I think
yes,
God even
spins
that right into a marriage. If you're going to have play, even sexual play between a couple, which is kind of a weird thing when you think about just logically, but it's so much fun when you're into it personally, relationally, that play is so much a part of our relationships with each other. And where you lose a sense of play because religious systems needed obligated people to work hard. I noticed that came up in our conversation. He was talking about No Compromise from Keith Green. And I said, sound like a healthy title to you? He goes, what? So I've been trying to live my life with no compromise. I said, honestly, Keith Green didn't live with no compromise. And he was like, what? I was walking a little around a sacred cow. But it got us into a really good conversation. Yeah. All that intensity is a false spirituality. It just is. And our need to do it, and that this will bring me to another email I have here. This is from my friend Mike in Florida. He said, totally love the podcast conversation. It's the one about identity and worldview. He said, for me, in regard to identity, I don't think it's so much a name title like in the book. After we talked about this, we got to this shepherd, poet, warrior, king for David. I'm going, okay, this is what makes me howl right there. Yeah, like it's that correct. Specific. But anyway, I like the language of true self versus false self, imposter self, or wearing a mask. And that's where I really get into this.
Yeah.
Much more than I need an identity to keep doing what I'm doing. It's recognizing the false identities, the lies that we live under. Our true self, he writes, is connected and lives in the world, but isn't attracted to what the world has to offer or the standards the world expects from me. It can't own me. Religion loves the imposter and helps the imposter navigate well within the world system of separation and scarcity. The fruit of the Spirit is about connectedness, whereas the fruit of the flesh is all about separation. That's a good observation right there.
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, and even the idea that that religion loves the imposter, right? Like that's, you think about that and you look back at Jesus's life, right? When he's living alongside of the Jewish religious system, it didn't fit well. It didn't align. Like when he was true to who God created him to be and who he was going to represent in the world, it did not fit well. They wanted him to get back in line. No, you need to be adhering to X amount of laws and you need to be on this and this is unclean and this is sacred and we're doing this and this and this. And he's like, whoa. Like, and I honestly, it makes me think back to this quote from not a great movie, but a really like a meaningful quote that's always stuck with me. It's from the movie Van Wilder. And he says, don't ever take life too seriously. You'll never get out of it alive. And I always laughed at that because I was like, wait a minute, hold on, what? But you think about that. And if you are always serious, if you're always intentional, if you're always this like intense, direct type A person and don't incorporate play, you won't get out alive. You're going to be coping. You're going to be falling into addiction. You're going to be stressed out. You're going to be over-medicated. I mean, the laundry list of things that we're facing today in our nation, instead of being able to play and able to joy, so to experience that rest and just the flexibility that it is to play.
Yeah, I love what to connect that to the fruit of the Spirit out of our true selves.
Yes.
It's connected. The imposter self is all about scarcity and separation. And I love that expression too. A religious system loves the imposter self because it's easy to manipulate.
Yes.
The true self, that's always threatening. It's threatening to systems that are really trying to do something for God, but have missed the heart of God. Like the weaponization of truth instead of the embodiment of truth with a capital T.
Gosh.
And those things just, I mean, I've loved the conversation we've had in recent months because those things keep coming back to me too. The identity stuff, the connectedness stuff, the all of it. It's just been so effective in my own heart and life.
Hmm.
And this from Bob in Spain. It's written this a couple times before. And this is from the thing I shared about some of the vision stuff that's unfolding in my life and praying for the wayward bride, as we called it, I think. Says, I got the impression from something you said that you would be interested in knowing if others of us have experiences in speaking to the bride. He said, well, I got finished listening to the podcast the second time. I put down my device purposefully, confidently, and tenderly. I just opened my mouth, and then without having to think it up, I found myself saying to his bride, you don't have to understand. You don't have to prove anything. It's enough to be loved. It wouldn't surprise me if more communication of this kind follows. I'm ready. You've shown us an open door that probably few of us know anything about or knew anything about. I love that. I've gotten this email quite a bit from people. Either they've already been doing this or just felt invited to have a focus on the bride in the same way and to be able to speak lovingly, kindly, and tenderly, as Isaiah talks about, Isaiah 40. Comfort my people. Don't badger them. Tenderly. Is a great way in any relationship you're in to find that tenderness of communication. You can communicate a lot of truth with tenderness.
Yes.
It's not about tenderness, not about being nice. It's not about, you know, just trying to get along. Tenderness is even speaking what's honestly in my heart, but saying it in a way that people can best hear it. Mm. And that's softly and tenderly. I can't tell you how many times in the first few weeks of us beginning to work through Sarah's trauma where Sarah just touched my wrist with her hand and just said, can you say it again softly? Can you say it again softly? I'm going, yes, I can. I can do this. Part of slowing to her pace for sure. And part of just, man, tenderness opens doors. And confrontation and anger and manipulation close doors rapidly.
It's interesting, though, because for me, one of the things that I've bumped into lately is how I've been getting into some interesting conversations where people are having a really hard time untangling the bride of Christ from the traditional Sunday morning gathering. And there's this idea of like, you know, even just the other day, I was talking with a friend and they were talking about, you know, don't look for the perfect church. Don't look for the perfect pastor. Don't look for the, you know, blah, 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 become the perfect member. And I was like, what? Like, it highlighted. And I wanted to say, like, you just told me to become the perfect imposter. Like that, no, I don't want to become the perfect imposter. I've been there. I was the perfect imposter. I did that really well, and I have no desire to go back there. And yet untangling that, where yes, the bride of Christ absolutely dwells in the traditional Sunday morning gathering, but it isn't the traditional Sunday morning gathering. It's not those places. And yet it's still, I'm amazed at how intertwined those two ideas still are though.
Yeah, or even saying not as church institution or just religious people. Yes. And I know everybody that goes to a Sunday morning thing is not a religious person, but correct, there's a whole lot of religion that goes on there.
Yeah.
A whole lot of performance and a whole lot of we're better than you because of what we believe or do or more committed, more whatever.
Yeah.
And I've had people write and say, you know, I don't know how to pray for that, the church. And that's why I use the term bride.
Yes.
I don't try and figure out who I'm praying for. I don't. Mm. I am praying for the bride of Christ wherever she is in the world. She could be lost in religion, mm-hmm, but not only. Mm-hmm. She could be lost in trauma, but not only. She could be lost in a variety of ways, or she could be that faithful Ananias or Simeon, or Anna or Simeon, who've been following God and have been marginalized in their experience because of their honesty and their truthfulness. They didn't fit into a system well, so the system cut them off at the throat. And when I pray for the bride, I don't decide who that is in my brain, who is and who isn't in that bride. I'm not praying for institutionalized people or religious people. I'm just praying for the true person inside who's part of that bride, no matter how much that's covered up by the other crud they've gotten involved in. Because this is about redemption. This is about God rescuing us out of those dark places.
Well, and I love even just the idea of, man, the idea of not determining who that is. Because, again, I feel like that is, as we're speaking to the bride, as you're praying for the bride, as you're encouraging the bride, you're talking to the bride, especially when I look back and I read through, you know, the scripture, it's like Jesus says, when Jesus was encountering the bride, it was in every unconventional place, a random spot, day-to-day life you could possibly fathom, whether it's getting a drink of water or it's in the synagogue or it's crossing an ocean or crossing a sea. You know, there was these encounters of just connection and relationship with his bride that is like, Invite into the kingdom. Come and taste this water. Come encounter this love. Come encounter this play. Let those little kids come to me because they are the kingdom. Let them come.
Yeah, and she might not look like the bride today.
Yeah, correct.
But the bride is in there. Sarah and I are reading Hosea right now for just a lot of reasons, and it's been incredibly powerful. This from chapter 3 read the other day. This is the language of the message, and he's talking about Israel are going... The people of Israel are going to live a long time stripped of security and protection, without religion and comfort, godless and prayerless. Mm. So that's the captivity he's foretelling. And I think some of that's been true for people in our world for quite a while. They felt betrayed by the religion they've been a part of. They might be in exile from it, or they might just be, I don't even pray anymore because I don't think God cares about me. But in time, they'll come back. Mm. They'll come back looking for their God. And they'll come back chastened to reverence, which is interesting words, before God and his gifts, ready, and this, I love this line, ready for the end of the story of his love.
Mm.
The end of the story. And to me, the space I pray in right there is right there. It's the middle of the story may look pretty ugly right now for our world and for people who are passionate for God but lost in stuff.
Yeah.
But they're getting ready for the end of this story. And for many of us, that means we had to come to the end of our false comfort in religious things. Hmm. We had to feel like we were emptied of all the stuff we trusted in the past, which is what God was wanting to do in the captivity with Babylon. I want to empty you of all the stuff, even the stuff I gave you that you made icons and idols out of, the new moon feasts and festivals and temple. And I destroy all that stuff
so you can find me again.
And that's always his desire, that we find him in the deepest of our hearts and begin to let our lives come around his reality and his truth. And that's where the imposter self gets exposed. That's where our scarcity mentality, that's where self-protection gets exposed. And now I want the end of the story of his love in my life. So it may have come through a lot of dark water and may come through a lot of stuff, but he's there ready to write the end of it.
And the sad part is that imposter self, when exposed, it will resist exposure violently. I mean, it has been very intentional to not be unearthed, to not be brought to the light, to not be exposed. Because if you do, then what? What's going to happen from there? Where do you go from there? And what is the world going to look like as you move into that space?
Yeah, and the worst letters I get from people, emails, phone calls, people that are angry about something I've written, or people who don't, you know, the worst of the anger and the angst comes right before the light dawns. I think it's that right there. It's that last resistance of flesh. Yes. I will not give in. This is not true, because it's we find comfort in those false things. So it's really attacking our comfort level. But man, when I get a call from 2 months later, an email just going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I wrote what I wrote to you or said what I said to you. Cause man, I was struggling against the very thing God was bringing into my life and heart. And that's pretty cool when that happens.
It is. And I think that really ties honestly back into that whole process, right? When it's coming out with that intensity, when it's coming out with that vengeance, right? Like we have the propensity to think, oh, that's because I'm warring against the lie. I'm warring against, like, this thing is opposing the truth and I already know the truth. And that's the hard part, is that imposter tries to sell itself as the truth. No, I am the authentic one. I am the real thing. And so it's, man, and that's where, especially when it's tied into religious principles, it's so hard to sort out, to untangle, is because now all of a sudden it's like, okay, you're trying to step into this greater level of freedom and life and truth and wholeheartedness. And yet the imposter experience is like, no, I am the truth. And that has to be a lie, because I mean, I'm having such a visceral internal reaction to it that it has to be a lie.
And the lie is, if this isn't a lie, I've wasted so much of my life.
Yes.
I'm too invested to look back.
Yes.
How hard it must have been for Israel to hear Isaiah when he comes talking. Chapter 2, he's saying, your festivals and your feasts, and I don't even go anymore. And it's like, what are you talking about? We didn't come up. God gave us these things. We're doing these things at his command. But they've lost sight of God and the doing of things. And they don't even realize it. And so when Isaiah picks at it, you're right. They become 100 times more defensive. This wasn't our idea. We didn't do it. This is what God's called us to do. This is the way it's always been. And don't tell me there's new stuff under the sun. There's no new stuff under the sun. Well, if there's no new stuff for you under the sun, you stop growing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
When you pitched a tent somewhere and you, or worse, pitched a tent. You built a house, man. You put down a foundation, built the house. You became less than God intended you to become, because you're a pilgrim in this world. Whatever it is that you desire, whatever it is that you want, is not here. I was with someone yesterday, and they were talking about the Lord's Prayer, and they were talking about, you know, our Father who's in heaven, and they were sharing this with some people. It was a powerful thing that happened among the people that they were talking to by realizing they had a father, that some fatherless kids who don't know that they have a father. And it was very, very powerful. But then I asked him, I said, so where is heaven? He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you pointed up there, like heaven's up there. He says, yeah, but it's, you know, it's all around us. And I said, yeah, there you go. That's heaven is another dimension. It's not someplace over the clouds, which
It's bizarre how I grew up with that, where you talk about here's Earth and then there's over there, instead of no, it's right here. It's just, it's as you said the other week, we're doorway into a kingdom that's already present. The kingdom of heaven is just on the other side of the dimension you're swimming in. And if you can get in touch with that reality that you're already in, it's not like you have to go somewhere or get something, or it's up there when we die. That kingdom, our Father in heaven, is he's the geography is still, he's here in us. The geography is not somewhere past Pluto. There's a place called heaven. And I just, it was a wonderful discussion because we got into that whole, oh my gosh, we're so close as we live and move and have our being in the world. The kingdom, we're doing that. We're swimming inside of God. He's all here, encompassing everything, even what unbelievers are about. Mm. They're still inside that. We all live in him, live and move and have our being. Paul's writing that, saying that to atheists, Areopagus in heaven. So it's not, you know, we Christians, we're inside of God. In a way, in a different way, we are. True. But it doesn't mean that others aren't as well inside. God's reality is right here. And if we had that sense, I think even in our prayers, we wouldn't be praying up there somewhere to do something down here. But that dimension is just beyond what you can see with your natural eyes, but it's right here.
Which really brings me back to, how old is the separation versus connected worldview? I mean, you think back throughout scripture, throughout history, like even you think about the Greek philosophers and the stories of the Greek gods, and it's like, no, their gods are up there. They're not here. They don't care about us, you know, whatever. Or the idea of the Holy of Holies. So only one priest is allowed in there, and he only has, you know, he's got bells around him. And so if he gets struck dead, then we can pull him back out because nobody else can go in there. And, you know, just this idea of the separation versus the indwelling, the at rest, the entombment of what it means to be connected with God. I mean, that's, you hear about Jesus and his teaching, and it's constantly about the kingdom is here, the kingdom is now. It's connected right now. Like, you have access to it right now. That is the good news.
It is. And we got it all separated out. I mean, my friend Bob, who will never finish this book on communion, but I love, is the idea that God didn't intend the Lord's Supper to be served in high altars at high cathedrals. For the early church, they served it in their homes. They made bread, served wine, Jesus present here, not a table with white linen on it over in that consecrated place, but the presence of Jesus consecrates my house, my table, my space, my life. And somehow we lost that. I think it had to be, I mean, for the Israelites, obviously, they wanted God in a temple. You know, they had not dealt with their shame at the cross. Hadn't happened yet. So correct. If you got a God that big and mean and scary, you want him over there in that box somewhere and make somebody else go in there and talk to him. But when that gets unsaid, we become the temple of the living God. He wants to live in us. Now, we don't have to have that separation between spiritual and secular. And it's all connected in the reality that he makes all things new. He makes my world sacred because he's present in it. Whether I'm praying for the bride in the midst of a beautiful vision that God's giving, or I'm playing with the new puppy, it's all about God present with us. And I think God delights as much when I'm playing with the puppy. I know it makes my heart happy. It's just a ball, as when I'm, okay, let's have some time and be playful with God about how we pray for his church in the world and look forward to whatever day is coming. And the lightness of heart that wraps around both the playfulness and the lack of separation, that it's all sacred, whether I'm playing golf with friends, I'm having a Bible study, I'm barbecuing dinner, I'm hanging out. It's all inside of him. And if we could live there with freedom and lose that need to spend every minute of our life trying to be fruitful, because I did say to the man I was with earlier this week, enjoy the life God has given you. That's as much a part of be fruitful in the world. The Keith Green no compromise, every minute
every day, given to God, doing whatever. If you're not called to be here, go overseas. It was a whole human effort driven thing. And I know people who got saved with Keith Green, and I think that's fabulous. God takes words that are true and makes them alive, even if some of the stuff around it's not the best. But I also know people who are at the Keith Green ministry, things in which some horribly abusive things happen to people. And I don't mean sexual abuse, but just religious abuse. It happened and people got hurt. So the idea that you can have a no compromise, zealous, every minute, fruitful for Jesus kind of talk is absurd. And whatever that is in your heart, talk to Jesus about it, saying, I really want to find what it is to be in love, at rest, and in play with you, and be far more fruitful in the world for doing so than trying to scope out every minute, trying to workaholicness, whatever. Now you're just medicating your loneliness by working at the gospel.
And that's what I love about the idea of rest, love, and play, because it's something that can be maintained. It's something that can be delighted in. It's something that can be enjoyed for a significant period of time. I think that's often why we designate, oh, I'm going to go do the church thing or the God thing on Sundays, because I can only handle that for one day. Like all this other stuff, like I can't handle that. If I'm bringing that level of intensity of every second, that's exhausting. If it's that intense and it's not that rest, love, and play. And if it's like, well, I've got all this other stuff going on over here, so I'm just going to designate the God thing to this one day and then we'll be okay. We'll be good. You know, and so it's either way, it's feeling that overwhelm, that pressure, that obligation, versus if we're actually living out of rest, love, and play, we can dwell in it. It can be in and among us at all times, because it's not this slave taskmaster that's driving us into the ground or forcing us into these religious systems. It's this invitation into breathe, play with me, see what I'm doing in the world, be creative, explore, discover mystery. That's maintainable. That's enjoyable.
Yeah, for a lifetime. But
yes, for a lifetime.
The people who run the Sunday morning things, they need all that hard work going on.
Yeah.
And I think we could say maybe this: if you're not playing with God, you're probably not working for him either. You're probably working for yourself. And when you learn to play with him, you'll do far more of God's stuff in the world than you'll ever do out of your own energy and effort and best ideas.
Thank you for traveling with us today on the God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.